The CU 2.0 Podcast.
Welcome to the CU 2.0 Podcast. This is your host, Robert McGarvey. I have a question for you. How long does it take your institution to approve a mortgage application today? Keeping in mind that there are many fintechs coming along that promise to be able to approve a mortgage application in 10 minutes or less. 10 minutes or less. Can you do it in 10 minutes? Can you do it in 10 hours? Can you do it in 10 days? Used to be 10 weeks. I know credit unions are doing better today, but are they doing good enough to succeed? Are they doing good enough to succeed? That's the question. For an answer, I went to Erin Coleman, Senior Impact Director at Filene. She's worked in the credit union movement for about 20 years, sometimes on staff at a credit union, sometimes at various tech vendors. She knows a lot about it, and her job is helping credit unions see more potent ways to compete in the marketplace. She also is pretty well aware of where credit unions can step up their game. For instance, she thinks that many have not done a very good job of communicating that they are community-based, that you no longer need to have a special employer to belong to a credit union. She also wonders why some credit unions, many credit unions, are still stumbling when it comes to attracting young adults who are looking for their first job or second job. Why aren't they looking at credit unions? Good question. She also wants to find ways to get more young adults involved in board membership, in other committees, and volunteering at credit unions. All good stuff. That's what she lives and breathes. She also talks here about the role of fintechs. Is it better to work with a CUSO than with a non-CUSO? Is there a moral basis for preferring to work with CUSOs? Good question. Member experience is paramount. Are you going to get the best member experience by working with CUSOs? Last point she discusses here is, are you looking far enough out? She said many credit unions are pretty good at looking a year out, 2 years out, maybe 3 years out. Can you look beyond that? Probably you ought to be looking beyond that. She threw out an idea that hadn't occurred to me, which is how much impact will autonomous cars have on the credit union business? These are self-driving cars. What will the impacts be? And many people are saying a majority of cars could within 10 years, probably certainly within 20 years, be autonomous. What kinds of impacts are we looking at here? Got to be thinking about it. You're going to enjoy this podcast. We cover a lot of ground. What got you into credit unions in the first place?
Sure. Well, I actually started my career in credit unions quite accidentally. I was living in Key West, Florida, and I was working for a grocery store after college because my brain was bored. And I saw an ad in the paper back in the days when we actually looked for jobs in newspapers that said I could make $10 an hour working as a teller. So I applied for the job. They called me in for an interview, and I rode my bike, as all people in Key West do, to the interview. And I had to take two tests. One was a word processing test, and one was a spreadsheet test. Well, I am a liberal arts major, so the word processing test was a piece of cake in spreadsheet. I didn't even know how to spell spreadsheet, much less Quattro Pro, which for people who are old enough to remember was a spreadsheet program we used long ago. So I failed that part of the test. But I asked HR to stay and figure it out because I was just determined. And I did eventually figure it out. And then as I pedaled my bike back home that afternoon, I thought to myself, you know, I really should learn how to use a spreadsheet if I want to work in business. And a few days later, the CEO of the credit union called me and said, so I heard you failed the test. And I said, yep, thank you. And he said, Erin, I really admire that you stuck to it, even though you knew you didn't get it. You didn't just quit. And he said, I see you have a lot of computer experience on your application. And we just bought a new electronic document management system and I need someone to run it. So I'm wondering if instead of a teller, working part-time, if you'd be interested in working full-time running this new department in our IT area. And that's how my career in credit union started in 1995.
That's almost a miracle story.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it really is. It was not expected, but I learned the credit union, you know, mission and vision and values. And in fact, my parents had been members of credit unions my whole life. They're both college educators. And all I really knew about the credit union was that was where we got what my dad used to call plastic money. And until I was in college, I didn't really realize there was more to it besides putting a plastic card in a machine and pressing some buttons and out pop some cash. It was in college I learned that was actually tied to your bank account balance. But beyond that, I really didn't know about credit unions until I learned about it during my orientation at that first credit union, Keys Federal. And but once I learned about it, I was hooked, and I've been involved in the movement ever since.
That question and particularly your answer always intrigues me, because credit unions to some extent are a cult. And yeah. I say that without negative connotations. And it's people who don't understand credit unions don't understand why they're a better way to do financial services.
You're right.
And I know the movement spends a lot of time and energy trying to communicate those differences, but I think the success is middling. And whereas you got a shock course in what a credit union's values are.
That's right.
And you say, wow, this actually is a better way to do things.
I think to your point that credit unions have failed in helping people to understand the value of membership and being part of credit unions. It was much easier for us back in the day when credit unions were formed to serve select employee groups only. And with the Community Credit Union Act and more credit unions going community-based, we as a nation haven't done a good job at communicating to the average person who's not connected with the credit union, hey, you can be part of us too. You don't have to be part of a particular business or have a particular kind of a job. And lots of smart people have been working to crack that code. So if you can do it, or if you know anyone who can do it, they will be a very wealthy person maybe.
I disagree with you. One thing about credit unions is pretty much nobody gets rich.
That is true. Having a career in credit unions, Robert, you're right. It's not a career anyone enters into to become a bajillionaire. My point is, if someone can crack the code on how to help people understand the value of credit unions and help us help our market share grow to the levels that we believe it should be, they should be, that would be really great. You probably could make yourself a really good career and make a good living.
So what do you see as the biggest issues confronting credit unions today?
A few things. One of them is certainly keeping up with technology. And when I say that, I mean really, how do we keep the member intimacy that we have and that we're known for, right? Because we're known for treating people like humans, not as numbers, at the same time that we can leverage technology, which is critical to our success and our ability to thrive, with the limited resources that we have. And there's a delicate balance there, a delicate balance. So I think that's a big challenge in front of us. I think sort of connected to that, but also extending to other parts of the credit union, is the way we refer to it at Feline, where I work, is the war for talent. And I think that extends not only within credit unions, because just like credit union member ages are going up, so are credit union employee ages. And so the questions around how do we encourage people who, young adults just coming out of school, and people who are looking for meaningful careers in this time when more and more people are looking for jobs that can contribute to making the environment and the world better socially, which is particularly from a social perspective what credit unions do. How do we get the word out that we are a place not just to have a job, but to have a career? And then for members too, because more and more, Generation Next, the largest generation in history, they want to do business with organizations that contribute to society. They have a high degree of confidence and not huge degree of capability as it relates to their finances. However, they think a lot more about money than, say, people in my generation did, and how to take care of it because they watched what happened to their parents and other family members during the Great Recession. And so I think another challenge in front of us, a long way of saying, is how do we excite younger generations to be part of our movement, whether that is as employees or as members, and also in governance, because it's also very important in that third leg of governance. We need more people who are, you know, in their 30s and in their 40s serving on boards and in all their various capacities, whether that be on a committee, on the board of directors, or on the supervisory committee.
What's the entry level job in credit unions? In your age, it was the teller, and that had been so for a generation or multiple generations before you. I've talked with many credit union CEOs who got involved with credit unions working part-time as a teller when they were in college.
Right.
And, what is the job now? Because teller ranks are shrinking. There are fewer and fewer tellers.
Yeah, you know, that's I would say that's a really good question, and I don't have any official research on that, but I would say anecdotally, tellers are still a big way because the branch is not dead. We are still, just like all financial institutions, building brick and mortar all the time. I think another area is still in retail, but that's call center or electronic services. So those are still member-facing roles, but rely more upon interacting with members when they have issues or need assistance as they're using self-service channels. I would imagine there's probably some ebbing and flowing going on there. As I work with younger people in the advisory role that I serve in today, I hear a lot of them work in, most of them work on the front lines, and they are not traditionally tellers. They are usually member service people or financial service people. It depends on, you know, the credit union, what the role is, but they're people who work with members directly, either in the branch or over the telephone. So I would say those are, and then I think they're levels, right? So there's like, you come in and you learn the basics of how to interact with a member and help them sign up for membership and maybe to take a loan application. That's one level. And then you learn some more skills that enable you to help with more advice and planning and so forth, and maybe even some underwriting. And then you proceed kind of from there based on your experience.
No, I wasn't aware until you said it that the age of credit union employees is trending upwards.
Yeah, both of employees and members.
Well, members I knew about. I've been hearing about that for at least 10 years. The employee thing fascinates me because I don't think that's particularly true of large financial services providers.
We really are interested in this broad topic, both of employees and members. And so that is why we have at Philippe, we have a whole center of excellence dedicated to human resources, which is called the Center for the War for Talent. And it's out of the University of Texas at Austin. And the whole first series of works that our fellow there, Siku Burmet, published was all about attraction and retention of employees. It talked about different ages of employees and what we care about. It's really, really, really fascinating stuff. So, yeah.
I would think credit unions would do reasonably well with young people, many of whom express an interest in doing something that has some kind of significance and some sort of social connectedness. And credit unions have a better argument for significance and social connectedness than many other kinds of financial institutions and also many other kinds of retail.
I would agree with you there. And I think that the trick is, you know, how do we help to spread the word about that? And I think some credit unions, you know, we have a continuum of how well we do at communicating that. I think one way that's unconventional that we get the word out about that is through our corporate social responsibility and just being in the market and demonstrating that and talking about it, both as we talk about the work that we do, but also the benefits of being an employee. because that's the kind of stuff that younger adults really want. They want to be a part of a business that contributes to the greater good, and we do that.
Well, let's shift gears to a topic I know a heck of a lot more about, which is credit union IT.
Sure.
What do you see as the challenges? What are the failures in credit union IT?
For me, as a person who was directly involved in IT at the very beginning of my career and then associated directly through my roles working for financial services companies for many years, and is now kind of somewhat removed, but do interact with IT professionals all the time as part of my job, I would say a big opportunity and challenge, which kind of goes along with something we talked about a little bit earlier in our conversation, has to do with fintechs and the question of, you know, partnering, where's the line, how do you choose the right ones to partner with, how far do you go, where do you partner with other people in the movement, where's the right line of staying in the space, meaning only, you know, connecting with fintechs that are CUSOs and directly connected to the credit union movement versus others. There are pros and cons. It's complicated for anyone or any organization, regardless of your size. So I think that's both a challenge and an opportunity for us because we're smaller. Even the largest credit union is smaller than the biggest banks. And so we can be more nimble than some of those bigger organizations, right? And also we don't have the same kind of resources or money because we're nonprofit and we're smaller. So figuring out that balance that's an exciting and challenging topic for us in IT, I would say. And failures, I would say, this is Aaron talking, not the opinion of any organization that I work for. I would say we, historically, when I worked in IT many years ago, and it kind of ebbs and flows, I've noticed. I've been around long enough to see that it's changed, or there have been cycles where we have a reliant, we want to put all our eggs in one basket, like all with one provider, do as much as we can with one provider to keep it simple. And then we spread it out to too many, and then we come back to one. I think while that movement in itself is not a poor choice, or doesn't really have a good or bad to it, the impact that it has to our members and their experience is where we probably didn't have a lot of foresight. I have to tell you that when I was managing IT at the beginning of my career, and I was trying to figure out where should I make investments, should it be with one company, with multiple companies, how do we do that at our reasonable size back then, I wasn't thinking about what would that mean to me as a member in terms of what it looks like when I sign in and how the system interacts with me and so forth. I think we're starting to think about that, and it's more conventionally discussed. And I think we didn't think about that soon enough. It's still a question that a lot of credit unions struggle with that I work with. And so I would say we created a challenge that we have today around experience and interacting with all these different kinds of technological providers that we have. And it'll be fun to see how that continues to evolve.
I think a continuing problem is that core system vendors often make it difficult to bring in best of breed ancillary technologies. I remember talking with the CEO of a mid-sized credit union whom I knew pretty well at one point. I asked him why he used a particular mobile banking platform. And I pointed out to him, it sucked. Everybody knew it sucked. And he said, yeah, it does suck. But getting the one I wanted was prohibitively expensive because of our core system arrangement. So, and that is not an abnormal thing to hear.
Yeah, I think, you know, cores are very powerful. And they're, you know, they're business people. And they're making good business decisions around ensuring that they have sticky solutions that create a question around why not for their customers who are credit unions in this case, right? And so they've done a good job of that. And because in credit unions, we're small, we're strapped for resources, And it's also often, you know, more financially advantageous, not often, but it can be financially advantageous for the credit union to stay in the family, which is a term that I've heard used just anecdotally, then why wouldn't you? So I think I guess what I'm trying to say is I can definitely understand from a business perspective why Coors have built out their solution set and built their packaging the way that they have, because it's great business decision. And I can also, I have experienced how that's challenging as a credit union professional, and then also as a person who works in I've worked for many financial services software companies who are trying to work with the Coors, and sometimes it can be difficult to your point, right? We at Feline, we rely upon funding from the Coors, and they're very generous to us, so we really appreciate that. And so I would be remiss in that mentioning that in the interest of full disclosure, but I can see both sides. And I think as a credit union fanatic as I am, I hope we are always making decisions that help the members live their lives and be healthy and free as much as we possibly can, regardless of what our role is. And I think it is a challenge for credit unions, to your point, Robert. The core or not the core question is it's a big one.
We're looking at a generation or two that seems to be making a lot of decisions based upon digital experience. And many credit unions have lagged in terms of providing digital experience, in part because of a lack of funding, in part because of contracts with other tech vendors that constrain their ability to get the best of breed. And I don't know the solution for that. I can tell you what the problem is. I can't tell you how to solve it. And if I could tell you how to solve it, that way I could probably make a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now tell me, and I hadn't thought about this, the advantages, disadvantages of using fintechs that are QSOs. And some credit union people say, oh, I want to keep everything within the credit union world. I only want to do business with QSOs. Other people say, well, geez, that's fine and good if you're getting the best available technology at the best available price. Are you sure you're doing that? And the answer in many cases is no, not sure. So what are the advantages?
Well, I mean, I think you know, there's the first questions to your point are, you know, you have to, the credit unions are required and they have an obligation and I think a great desire to be responsible stewards of their members' money, because unlike banks, we are owned by the people who we serve, and it's their money that we're playing with. So we got to take good care of it, right? So that's the first question. Are we making a technological decision, a technology decision that supports the members and makes the best use of their money? And does that mean, and then that splits off to another question around, based on who our credit union is and how, and our structure and governance, what does that mean to us? Is the best use of the members' money, the technology, also in an organization that serves credit unions and is 50% owned by credit unions and was created for the credit union system, or not so much? I think that's, I think people can have an opinion about what the right move is, and I think it's a very individualized answer.
What other pain points do they have that we haven't talked about?
The ones I hear on a repeating basis and that I do work about include member experience, which we touched upon. How do we create an experience that keeps members with us and not going somewhere else, and that attracts new members? They are innovation. How do we create innovative solutions that answer the problems that our members have? And that's a focus as we are on members and caring about what they need and not on a bottom line. For example, if I compare that or juxtapose it with banks, we do a lot of what we call at the Institute belly button gazing. When someone has a great idea and presents it to their colleagues in a credit union, the first response back is often, can the Corps support it? Who's going to do it? Where's the budget? I don't have time. Ain't going to be me, right? And often we've walked out of the room having made a decision about that idea without ever having considered who we're solving for. One of the big light bulb things that happens in the teaching work that I do these days is around changing that frame. And when credit unions are successful in doing that, not to ignore feasibility and viability because they are very important and necessary, but to start first with, wait a minute, who are we? What kind of problem are we going to be solving here, and what does that mean? And then go to feasibility and viability, really can make a profound impact on the decisions the credit union makes, the way they're run, and the way that their members perceive them. And so I think that's another big challenge and opportunity in front of credit unions. Oh, I know another one that came to mind just a moment ago has to do with strategy. A couple of points on strategy. It strikes me that we traditionally do a very good job of thinking about a year out or maybe even 2 or 3 years out. Credit unions, we still need to push a little further. What does it look like? What does our credit union look like even further down the pike? What is success going to mean to us? What are our greatest opportunities and threats as we head in that direction? And then continue to revisit that. I mean, a great example of that is the disruption of autonomous vehicles. As amazing as they are, they're going to have a profound impact on a lot of things, on the way that we do business and credit unions in particular. I think that's something strategy and looking a little bit further afield, not just in the short term or the near term, but the far term. And I think when I do exercises with credit unions around differentiation, how do we differentiate ourselves? What does that mean? How are we different from our competitors? The credit unions I work with are still trying to figure that out, just beginning to understand, wow, we don't know that much about what our competitors do. And so I think that's something from a strategy perspective that is in front of us. You know, also connected to that, along with differentiation, is probably our value proposition discussions. Some credit unions have this nailed, and some are still working on it. Like, we have the label, here's our value proposition and all that. But when you start to talk about, well, what is the thing that you're focused on, and that's the thing you base your decision on before you make other decisions, credit unions I work with often struggle to say, well, I choose member intimacy, I choose operational efficiency, I choose innovation or technology, because we want to do all things for all people at all times, and we don't have a lot of resources, so it's scary to choose. And I think, and our research has demonstrated that credit unions who make that choice have the best results, and it's hard to do. It's easy for me to say, very hard to do.
No, is your sense that credit unions have a good, realistic sense of who their competition is?
I think they do. I think, you know, it's hard to generalize over 5,500 organizations of all kinds of sizes. And I would say, you know, when it comes to the competition, traditionally, that's in the bag. People understand that. Credit unions understand that. I think what strikes me is credit unions are getting a better sense of who their competition is in cyberspace. and that includes those non-bank players, these fintechs that are providing all these financial services who are not, they're not financial institutions, so they don't have the same rules and regulations that we do, and they've got a lot of money. I think we're getting better at that, and I think that's going to be helpful for us as we get better at it. I think that, you know, getting back to what I was saying about the interest in member experience, I think credit unions are also getting better at and have a ways to go in terms of recognizing that their competition is also experience. It is what we expect as consumers ourselves, not only what we expect, but what we demand. Because when we go to a website and we can't get that merchandise and by the next day or in 4 hours or less, then we're leaving that site and we're going to, whether that be Amazon or Zappos or whatever, we're going to the provider that can give us that. It's the same thing when we consume financial services. we want an answer right away. We don't have to, we don't want to wait 45 or 60 days. And we don't care as consumers about what the policies and procedures are. We just want it done. We want to get on with our lives.
In that light, I mean, something I point to is Rocket Mortgage.
Yep, exactly.
Which often says, hey, we can give you a decision on your mortgage application in 10 minutes. And then there's a footnote where, which essentially says, well, this applies to maybe 80% of the loan applications. They're going
right.
to be some that, but there is no credit union that I'm aware of that can respond in 10 hours to 80% of the mortgage applications.
Oh, not even, I mean,
many of them struggle to respond in 10 days to 80%.
When it comes to mortgages.
Keeping in mind that this is real simple. 80% of them are going to be obvious yeses or nos. It's going to be pretty obvious. You know, I remember this was in 1999. I saw a banner ad on the Yahoo website. I mean, you're talking about old Borland software. I can bring up Yahoo. But and it said, apply for a credit card. We'll give you a verdict in like 3 minutes. And I said, well, this is insane. I got to do this. And they did. They did. And in those days, you sent in a paper application to a bank or credit union. A month later, maybe, you got a verdict.
Yeah, we have come a long way from that, thank goodness. And when I have done a lot of member experience work in the past, and it is not the application that's so much the trouble. It is the particularly when it comes to mortgages, it is the processing time where members have big questions and we're not giving them answers until we have all the information, which causes concern and frustration. So there's calling once, calling twice, calling six times, leaving messages on every mailbox we can find, marching into the branch. And then you have 16 people at the credit union, and I'm, you know, hyperbolizing to make a point, who are dealing with this one question, where an alternative to that could be, what if there were a way for us to provide periodic updates? In 3 days, you can expect this to be happening. You can call this number to hear an automated status update, or I'm making it up. But you see what I'm saying is, what would be the aggregate impact to a proactive approach? Even as we continue to shrink the time frame for total response, what might that look like instead of waiting for everything to be perfect? And credit unions, when I talk to them about that part and we work on it, they're like, yeah, no, how could we do that? So I think that's that could really help. Because I know, yeah. Like for me, Robert, for me, for example, and maybe for you too, I'm a credit union person. I'd much rather get a mortgage at a credit union than a bank. And I got to, you know, the things as a consumer to have to look at are the money, because, you know, percentage points matter when you're making a big purchase. And of course, response time, because if I got to get some work done on my house, I can't wait for 2 months.
And we're in a culture of immediacy. You know, Amazon has taught you that you can buy a pair of shoes online today and get them tomorrow. You don't have to wait.
Or even less. right?
And if you live, I live near two Amazon warehouses. I can get same day delivery, often free of charge. So this is a world of immediacy. And to me, many credit unions are still struggling with that idea. And I'm not totally convinced that they understand who their competition is, because I think the fintechs are doing a remarkable job of carving out what they believe are highly lucrative niche markets, like home mortgages. Mm-hmm. I worry about why they don't have that much interest in car loans. That scares the hell out of me. It's you mean I can have that business? What's wrong with it? It must be something wrong with it if you don't want it. I don't see community banks as significant competitors. I see the top four or five banks as massive competitors. It's kind of like the Walmart effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
How many local pharmacies are there where you live? Where I live in Phoenix, I could point you to one in Central Phoenix. I could point you to many, many, many dozens Walgreens and CVSs in Central Phoenix, and one independent that I know is still in business. That's it. Hardware stores, we see in a lot of businesses, the big chains are what survives, and everybody else gets smashed along the way. Before we go, the CU 2.0 podcast is looking for a few good sponsors to help us spread the word about the digital transformation of credit unions. You could be one of them. Contact Robert McGarvey for details at rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. First come, first served. Again, that's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. The CU 2.0 podcast.